If you would like these traditional Latin Mass homilies broadcast to a wider audience, please rank Padre Peregrino at 5 stars on iTunes. Thank you.
In the name of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, amen. Well, guys, tonight my talk is how to be a better father. How to be a better father. And what I ended up doing is I wrote this on the way while I was driving. So you might have to hear me kind of wade through the waters here of what I'm doing here. But in this topic, how to be a better father, I decided to start with 1 Peter 5. So I'm going to read that to you. So I exhort the elders, I think in the original Greek that's actually priests, I exhort the priests among you as a fellow priest and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as a partaker in the glory that is going to be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God that is among you. Shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly, as God would have you. Not for shameful gain, but eagerly, not domineering over those in your charge, but being examples to the flock. And so I think what we're going to start with right now is kind of an understanding. Really, he's writing this to priests, how to be a better priest, how to be a better bishop. But I was looking at this. This was actually in the Office of Readings. So I realized that so much of this that is in here is about how to be a better dad. And I know a lot of you guys have already raised your kids. But remember, it's not too late. And that's one of the themes. And I know you guys are all doing great jobs. But just like in the priesthood, there's always room for improvement. And I think the best way to first have a as our launching point is to really understand male and female complementarity. Something that's being lost in our culture right now. One of my favorite theologians is actually from here in the Bayou, and Dr. Brant Petrie. And he talks about how if one of his kids runs into the street and scrapes his knee, his wife would be the first one to kind of hold the crying kid and nurture the crying kid. And he wouldn't be mean about it, but he might eventually say something like, you know, this is kind of an indication of a bigger injury you could get if you keep playing in traffic. And his point in this is to show that a woman or a mother's job is pure mercy, where a father's job is pure mercy, plus having this job of finding unintended negative consequences of the future, having this oversight, this high tower view of unintended negative consequences of the future. It's a prophetic role of knowing what can attack your family. It's a prophetic role of being able to speak to your wife and to your children about what might be not obvious to them because it's given to the grace of office of dad. Let me parse that out. What I mean is a dad has the job of sometimes saying the unpopular truth, even when the mother's job is just to nourish at that point. Now, obviously, there's times, clearly, that that's going to flip, that the dad is just there for a crying daughter, and maybe the mom went off a little bit too hard on her on one topic. So this flips a lot, don't get me wrong. But a father's job is to see the unintended negative consequences that can come. However, and here's something that can be missed by people who kind of already get this. You know, most people who are coming to these talks, I would assume, probably understand that the father is made to be the leader of the family. Obviously, again, we all have room in our priesthood and our biological fatherhood to work on that. But there's something else I want to speak of on this, and it's encouragement. Where we are in the world right now with raising kids is the devil speaks so many lies into kids' lives about not being good enough. And to be a good dad is a lot like being a good coach. And my experience is this, that any kid can take a tough coach if two things. One, he knows he loves him, the coach loves him. And two, if the kid hears some encouragement in there. And I think it's the same thing about being a dad. You can be strict with the rules and you can explain the faith without any softness, and you can even call your children to a high bar. However, it won't carry any weight if you're not also encouraging them. So in short, here's what I'm saying here. If you're sort of on the soft side and don't know how to lead your family, you've got to flex your muscles a little bit and learn how to sort of find these unintended negative consequences, things on the internet, people your daughter shouldn't be dating, things like that, and get a little more prophetic, get a surgical precision for what's happening in their lives. If you already got that down and your kids know that you're a tough guy, you have to realize you will lose them if you don't have encouragement. This isn't just, you know, me saying soften up. I've seen one group of traditionalists, I'll leave them unnamed, and I've never seen an adult child in that group who's still Catholic. Why? Because rules without relationship lead to rebellion. Rules without relationship lead to rebellion. That means a relationship first with Christ, His church, but also with you guys, with have a relationship with the kids. So if you think about it again, a good coach, a kid can trust a coach's cracking the whip, holding him to a high standard, even a difficult standard, if the coach loves him, if the kid knows that he is loved by this guy. And for boys, the very best way to do this is encouragement, is words of affirmation. There's a book out called Love and Respect. It's written by a Protestant, but it saved hundreds of thousands of marriages. And it really shows that the miscommunication in so many marriages is that the woman wants to be loved and the man wants to be respected. But a lot of times the woman doesn't realize she's disrespecting the guy, so he pulls back, and then she has temper tantrums that she doesn't realize is disrespecting him, and then the whole cycle gets worse and worse and worse. He pulls out as far as he gets more distant from her, and then she pulls back her respect, and then he pulls back his love, and then this just goes on and on and on. And this guy has written this book that, again, I think he saved hundreds of thousands of marriages to show how much the woman needs to feel the affection and how much the man needs to feel respected. It's a very scripturally based book, and he kind of avoids the pitfalls of like extreme conservatism and extreme liberalism. But what we learn from this is, from a young age, raising boys, they need to feel respected by you. Words of encouragement, words of affection, even better than words of affection, words of affirmation is the best way to encourage your sons. Because what is the world, the flesh, and the devil speaking into your sons' lives? The world is speaking, you don't have to be a boy, you don't have to be a man, you can be anything you want, including a woman. In fact, here, we have surgery for you if you just want to get that taken care of right now. And if you do choose to stay a boy or a man, there's actually no difference between that and being a girl. That's what the world is speaking to you. And boys in the back, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that's the lie. That's not the truth. What does the flesh speak? The flesh speaks, you're not strong unless you're impure. You're not strong unless you experiment. And what does the devil say? The devil says, you're not enough. So what does a good dad have to speak against the world, the flesh, and the devil? Good dad has to speak against the world by speaking the truth to his son that it is good that God made you a boy and God is turning you into a man. And there's nothing to be shameful about in that, especially if you're going to be a good leader. The world, the flesh. What do you speak against the flesh? You speak of the beauty and the strength of purity. You speak of the beauty of the complementarity between man and woman, and you live that out in your family. And the devil, how do you speak against the devil that says to your son, he's not enough? You show your son he is enough. He is enough. Doesn't mean he doesn't have things to work on. Of course he's got things to work on. But if you show him he's enough, he will be a David who can take on Goliath. That's the type of sons that you want to raise. Not ones that are arrogant and think they can do everything by themselves. Why did David know he could take down Goliath? because he knew that united to God, nothing could stand in his way. Nothing could. There's a really good book by Dr. Meg Meeker, and she's a pediatrician, and she wrote Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters. And I'd encourage any of the men here, if you have daughters, to read that. Because she shows the real key to raising girls is time, right? For boys, it might be as complex as how do we figure out hunting and fishing and decals on the car and things like that. For raising girls, she's not by any means saying she's shallow. So she's one of the most brilliant writers I've ever read. But for raising girls, it's a lot about simply spending time with them. And she talks about how, it's actually pretty surprising, she says the number one determinant if the daughter is going to grow up and be promiscuous is her own self-worth and self-esteem. And she shows with statistic after statistic after statistic, the determinant of a young girl's self-esteem and self-worth is her father. Again, she's a female pediatrician, brilliantly educated, and she shows it's not the mother. She's got a lot of great things to say about moms, a lot of encouragement to moms, but the number one determinant of a girl's self-esteem, who she's going to date, how she's going to hold her head when she walks down the aisle, is if her dad is there for her. And that is also lived by safety. If a girl knows that she is safe around her dad, you've won her heart. And by safety, it's a few things. One is just what you first thought of, physical security in the house. Does she feel physically secure? Another is pure. One problem with looking at pornography is men often end up looking impurely at their daughters. Now, don't worry about occasional temptations, because everyone has brain farts, and that is not what I'm talking about. You know, some other guys can just beat themselves up for just temptations against their daughter, but temptation is not the same as consent. If you look at her with purity, she'll feel safe around you. Another thing is spiritually safe. If people are living in sanctifying grace in the house, if men are living in sanctifying grace in the house, they will feel that this is a safe place. If girls do not feel it's safe, then hanging out in a guy's car is just as safe as home. Is it a place that is spiritually safe for her to be? I'm making a video on Facebook here pretty soon on how to keep your kids from being trafficked. And I show it, I'll be releasing it in the next week, and I really show the main thrust of this is in certain countries like Thailand, families sell their girls into being sex slaves. Other countries, like when they had the fallout after communism in places like Moldova, families were so broken up that they were just kidnapped. Here's how girls end up trafficked in the United States. First of all, the FBI says the average age of girls into prostitution is 13. This isn't like propaganda from us involved in the anti-trafficking movement. That's an FBI statistic. The average age of entrance into prostitution is 13. Okay, newsflash, that's not prostitution. That's sex slavery. No 13-year-old wants this. Okay, if they're not kidnapping her, if the big black van isn't pulling up in front, how are these girls ending up there? In the United States, it's by running away. The relationship is broken with their family, usually with their dad primarily. He's either not there emotionally or not there physically. She runs away, and the FBI reports that over 90% of all runaways will be approached within 24 hours of the bus station by a trafficker. So how do you keep your girls from being trafficked? Don't have them run away. Does that mean you lock them up? No. How do you make sure they don't run away? By keeping communication open with them. If a girl knows that she can come to you with things that she has struggled with without shame, then you have open communications. And this is actually the same for boys. That if your kids get into things that they shouldn't have, like pictures on the internet that they shouldn't have, or drugs, or drank, or whatever, and they come to you and they tell you, yeah, bring them to confession, sure. Especially if it's mortal sin. I'm not saying to wash away the church's teachings or pat them on the head after this. Bring them to confession. However, do you do that with shame or do you do that with encouragement? Because if they sense shame when they come to you, with a confession, and they're crying, and they found something on the internet that they never should have, and you make them feel bad, guess who's the last person they're ever going to talk to again about this? You. And you know who they're going to talk to? Their friends, their counselors, Planned Parenthood, everybody you don't want them talking to. So if, and I always say this, you know, when we sin, we have an objective feeling of guilt that comes from God. I wouldn't say guilt comes from God, but how we were wired by God leads to an objective feeling of guilt that shows that we're in somewhat the right relationship with God. Even if we're in mortal sin, it reveals we're somewhat in the right relationship because we feel the objective weight of guilt. But see, 200 years ago, if someone just, you know, did whatever behind the barn, they could go to confession because they weren't living in such an environment of shame. So here's what I say. Guilt is associated with God. Shame is associated with Satan. Again, there's a couple caveats because it's not that God wants us to feel guilty. But if we do sin, there's an objective feeling of guilt that comes from God. So guilt comes from God. Shame comes from Satan. What happens if you go to confession? We know objectively all guilt, all objective guilt, not just the feeling of guilt, real guilt is washed away. So since that is gone, if you leave confession and you still feel shame, guess who it comes from? It comes from Satan. And so dads, who are you going to be the image of when your kids mess up? God or Satan? If you increase their shame, even in serious sins, then you become an image of Satan to them. You know, there's people with even good families, and their kids can come to them with feelings of same-sex attraction. There's two really erroneous ways to deal with this. One is, you pat them on the head and say, congratulations in coming out of the closet. That's how 90% of our country has gone. Of course, that's a horrible way to deal with it. But then, there's also the other way of just kicking them out of the family and making them feel horrible, but how is that going to benefit their salvation? Of course, the way of Christ is how Jesus treats Peter after Peter messes up and comes to him. He doesn't deny his father's truth, but he loves him just as he is, but too much to leave him that way. The father's love is this: he loves you just as you are, but too much to leave you that way. And that is the love of a father. He loves his kids just as they are, but too much to leave them that way. The next line in 1 Peter that I was looking at to tell you guys is, not under constraint, but willingly, compulsion, not under compulsion, but willingly. You know, before I was ordained, Archbishop Chaput said to us, priests mess up a lot, and they'll be caught on a day that they're grumpy, and they might snap at somebody. And he said, but in my, I can't remember if it was 30 or 40 or 50 years of priesthood, and Archbishop Chaput had a temper, but he said this, and this was very true about his life, and he would snap at some of us in seminary or whatever, but he said this to us, he said, but if they know that you love them, they'll forgive anything. If they know that you love them, they'll forgive anything. And see, too often men think of fatherhood as perfection. That, oh, I yelled at my kids, it's all over, I can't win them back. What's the point anyway in trying to win them back? That's a bad attitude. A strong father has the ability to say, I'm sorry. In fact, in my priesthood, I realize I say I'm sorry two or three times a week. Some people might say, well, then either you're messing up too much or you're showing a weakness that you shouldn't. No, I just mess up and I say to people two or three times a week, I'm sorry. And I hope they say, I forgive you. And first of all, I feel led by the Holy Ghost to say that. It's not for number two that I say this, but hopefully number two shows people a humility to show that I don't think I'm better than them. And that's what I'm encouraging you guys as dads, that if you mess up, say that. It'll show a strength and a humility to be able to say that. And if your wife says, I'm sorry, say, I forgive you. Don't wait. Don't say, don't hold a grudge like you're 8 years old. Say immediately, I forgive you. So when Archbishop Chaput said this to us, it opened my eyes that people will forgive, just like your kid. Your kids will forgive you if you mess up. When I was involved in university ministry, I kind of gained a reputation, never for being a harsh confessor, but for being a challenging confessor, you know? And I think the reason that the students always still ended up in my line and wanted to keep coming to me was because I'd often be in the confessional after midnight, after one. I was there for them. And that spoke louder than me being a tough guy or whatever else. Because they knew if I'm going to stay up after midnight to be for them in the confessional, that I really love them. And see, people don't just listen to our words. They look at how we live our lives. And if they see that you are living a sacrificial life as a dad, not just that you're laying down the law, but if they see that you are a sacrificial father, they will follow you anywhere. Okay, I'm having trouble reading my writing, but I wrote down a couple more lies of the devil for you to speak into here. Okay, here we are, boys. Here's some lies that the here's the two main lies that boys hear, and I'm going to get to how a father, a good father, answers this. You're not strong enough, and you're not enough. That's the lies that young boys in 2016 hear growing up. The truth to speak to them is obviously to show them they are enough. Doesn't mean to coddle them and say, you're perfect, honey, don't work on anything. I'm not saying that. But to show that with God's grace, they have the ability to get there. Because a kid who's encouraged, he can go 10,000 miles past where you thought he could, if he feels encouraged. The other thing boys hear is, you're not enough. Well, I guess I already said that one. You're not strong enough, and you're just not enough, period. Okay, here's what girls hear. You're not beautiful enough, and you're too much. What I mean by too much is, think about it. And Dr. Meg Meeker admits this, that dealing with teenage girls can be a complex situation. Most dads don't know how to deal with that. But her thing is, you don't have to have all the answers. Just be there. And as far as the lies girls hear that you're not beautiful enough, it's not about speaking into her physical beauty, whether she is beautiful or not. It's really in speaking into the beauty of her soul. And I don't mean just say your soul is beautiful or whatever, but this ties in again to safety. Does she feel loved just when you look in her eyes? When she's around you, does she feel safe or does she feel she's being lusted after? When she's around you, does she feel she can talk to you? Let's say she made out with a boy last night, wasn't sure if it's a mortal sin or wasn't. If she comes and talks to you about that, is she going to leave with more shame or encouragement? As St. Therese said, it doesn't matter how many times you fall, only how many times you get back up. Because if she only knows that she's going to experience shame, she's not going to talk to you. But if she understands that you value her in and of herself, she will trust you through the worst things in her life. Even if she leaves for 10 years because she hates the Catholic Church, if this ends up being her one place that is safe in life, she will come back to you. 1 Peter 5 says, not for shameful gain, but eagerly. Not for shameful gain, but eagerly. How much? 3 minutes? Okay. When kids leave the faith, sometimes dads feel really bad. Did I do enough? Maybe the answer is yes, maybe it's no. I'm not here to say that everyone's innocent. But you have to remember, kids have free will. And what are we called to? Exactly figure out if they're always going to stay with the Catholic faith? No, the goal is what St. Ignatius of Loyola said, dare ne computare in Latin, to give and not to count the cost. To give and not count the cost. That is what it means to not like try to coordinate, well, my kid's already so far from God, what's the point in doing it? Get on your knees at night. Make a vigil. Fast for your kids. It's not over. It's not over. Even the ones that you think are farthest from the faith. It says in 1 Peter, not domineering over those in charge. I had a bunch to say on that, but I didn't expect boys to be here. It's sort of on the union of man and woman, so I'll skip that part. Guys can ask me later. I just need a couple more than 2 minutes, but it'll only be like three or four.
Right.
Jesus and the apostles. When I know there's a good understanding in a lot of more conservative groups that the man is the head of the household. But just as we avoid the problems that are in liberalism, feminism, all of that, we also have to realize that Satan can set traps on the other side of a healthy understanding of this. And I've done little missions in five continents, and I've noticed this is a Europe's traditional movement seems to usually get this a little bit better, but sometimes in the United States we can go a little bit extreme as far as sometimes men can treat their wives as other children, right? And that's not a healthy approach to the man being the head of the household. What is the way that Jesus, say, led the apostles? What if Peter, you know, it's pretty amazing. You can find some times that Peter actually talks back to Jesus. And what does Jesus say? Step down on God? No. No, he kind of endures it, teases him back a little bit, shows him he's wrong. And I'm not saying that's always the way with your wives, just show them they're wrong. Because we're talking about the difference between God and Peter, right? Not just what we're talking about, male leadership. But here's what I'm saying. If Jesus is patient with Peter and doesn't just say, I'm God, be quiet, how does he gain his trust? Through service. It's through service. You know, when Jesus washes the feet of the apostles, this is truly the best vision of what it means to be a good husband and a good father. Was Jesus head of the church? Yes. Was he in charge of the apostles? Yes. Were they anything on the ontological spectrum of glory next to him? No. Not even now in heaven. And yet he kneels down and he washes their feet. I have some friends and they have 10 kids and they give a ton of talks to large groups of men and women. And the woman of this couple gets to talk to a couple hundred women and the man talks to a couple hundred men. And their whole key to a happier marriage for everybody listening, this might sound a little bit crude, the dad tells all of the 200 men listening, serve your wives more. And the woman says, unite with your husbands more. Or the woman says to all the women, unite with your husbands more. And it's such a great message. Because why? Because both are hard. Usually, women don't like to unite as much as men because of the differences in libido. And usually, men don't like to serve because we're lazy. And so to push against that makes everything more romantic. Because for a woman, she doesn't give 5 minutes. She gives her entire universe. And so that begins for her by coming home with flowers, a back rub, you doing the dishes. I don't mean all that just tit for tat to try to get something out of her. I mean, for a woman, romance starts long before the bed and includes an embrace that is quite a bit longer than what man is looking for. But for you guys, since I'm not talking to the women, if I were talking to them, I'd say, hey, you know, when I do give talks to women, rather, it's, yeah, you know, I'm not saying, let me just put it this way, just be generous. But to men, it's about service. It's about being a servant to your family. Okay, almost done here. Peter says in 1 Peter 5, but being an example to the flock. When I was in my first year of priesthood at University of Colorado, I had a kid who was the most joyful kid, and he just really fell in love with the priesthood through hanging out with me and another priest. And he ended up entering seminary, and he wanted to be a priest so bad. And one day, after 6 months of him hanging out with me all the time, and this was the most joyful kid in the world, I said to him, hey, what kind of homily would you give on this? And I handed him the gospel. And he gave me this fire and brimstone thing back. And I thought, oh, crap. He got all that from me. I turned this joyful kid into this guy who was going to be like all fire and brimstone. And I never caught that so many of my homilies were fear-based. And that caused me to change that. I changed it because I saw something in me that I hadn't caught coming out in him. And so the best indication of a lot of this, how you're raising your kids, is what do you see in them? And again, it's not too late. Don't beat yourself up now, because you're going to see in your kids so many of your virtues and so many of your vices. But here's what's beautiful about women and children. I don't mean, again, to put those into one category. I just mean we men have a darkening to our intuitions sometimes, where women and children usually have a really deep intuition that we have to hope for. And they can smell a skunk. They can smell a rat. The best way to be a good dad is to be holy through and through when nobody's watching. Because guess what? One, the kids are watching and your wife is watching. You know, John Paul II, when he would see his dad on his knees till like 2 a.m. praying. He called this his first seminary, when he saw his dad praying all the time. It's not enough to be Orthodox. They have this sixth sense. They can see your secret virtues and they will pick them up. They'll see your secret vices and they'll pick them up. If you have a little bit of, you know, sneaking around on the internet, that brings in real demons to your family's house. It's not enough to go to confession. If a man looks at pornography, demons enter his house. I'm not kidding you. And those are very hard to put back where they came from. So don't be so surprised if your kids pick it up after that. If a man is pure, that will be contagious. You know the old phrase, a fish stinks from the head down? Ah, but the thing is, the family's glory will be from the head down also. So even if no one's watching, even if you think it's too late, even if you think your kids have left the Catholic faith, even if they think you're too extreme or a wimp or whatever else, it's not too late. Become that saint. Become that good dad. And you will get the one goal that is our only goal in any of this. It's to get our parishes and our families to heaven. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.